Good afternoon. You're joining the second hour of We the People Radio. We had a really good time the first hour, so if you missed it, we hope you listened to the archive because it's worth it. So I should do a little housekeeping that I didn't do in the first half because I actually do know what we're doing the next couple of weeks. Believe it or not, Bob.
This
just in. I know. I've somehow been hijacked by someone else. But things kind of came together, you know. Our good friend Stephen Manfredi back there in Virginia, he has Ryan Morrow from the Clarion Project, who will be with us next week. He did a really good analysis of President Trump's UN speech and how most of these speeches don't talk about the Islamist ideology, and this speech really did. We also have another guy in the first hour that I don't have confirmed yet, but next week will be two different people. Interesting. We'll get back to wider national politics. The week after, we have a guest host, and that'll be Vince Stevenson. So it's his show to put together, but I believe it'll be about the Reading City Council recall and some stuff connected to that, so you don't want to miss that either. That's the 22nd. So next couple of weeks will be kind of fun. And if you have ideas or people you'd like for us to have on, you can reach us on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, and our emails and our phone numbers and all that good stuff are there. And that is mostly all. Yeah. All the housekeeping.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we should identify the voices. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cunliffe.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And all the music comes from Bob Martin, which is why you only hear his voice once and then there's no voice after that. Yeah, that's all the music. And our guest is Dr. Sid Cormier. Say hi, Dr. Sid.
I'm Dr. Frazier Cormier. And I'm listening.
And I'm listening. And analyzing. More importantly, you're analyzing, right?
Right. On Sunday? Nope.
Yeah, not on Sunday. That's a day off. Well, we had this conversation last week, and as we were chatting on the phone, I thought, you know, this would make a great radio program because, honestly, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out if they're losing it. It just seems like the whole world has gone mental. So I think people are wondering, is it the world going mental? Am I going mental? Am I part of it? Am I outside the loop, inside the loop? Mm-hmm. How do I fit in the puzzle? And how do I make it stop? I think a lot of people would like some of the madness to stop. I don't think that's happening anytime soon, though. What would be your considered opinion as a professional in the mental health field?
Well, a lot, so much is changing compared to our past history. You know, in terms of my perspective, I was around before social media, and now there is social media before.
Yeah.
Internet knowledge and that sort of thing. So there's a tremendous overwhelm of information. And taking things at face value, if it's posted, it must be true.
Yeah.
And there's stuff all over the place. There's fictitious audiences in people's head regarding their Facebook or Twitter followings or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. What about social media? Social media seems like plays such a huge role in people's decision making anymore.
So if you're kind of off the bubble to start with, you throw that into the mix.
If you're not aware of what's going on, and we got to get new kind of parameters in terms of what's what we call the word normal, but what's not pathological. I mean, like video gaming, like my son. I mean, he's limited on how much time he can spend. When his friends come over, they're really active little guys. They play soccer and all that stuff. But if they get the chance to get on a tablet, that's what they're going to be doing. It's scary. So, you know, or playing Skyrim or whatever game little kids play on video games, it's captivating. So, you know, there's a lot changing that wasn't there. This is going to date me, but I remembered LSU when Pong came out.
First game. Oh, yeah. It dates all of us.
Yeah.
We're all of that era.
Wow, you know, this is cool. And then you think about what's happening now.
I mean, you think about the sound. It just had one sound.
And now you have fictitious characters that you're creating and getting points for and that sort of thing.
And you get to make your own.
Yeah,
I mean, it isn't even like Monopoly where you pick the shoe or you pick I mean, you literally get to craft them and kind of put yourself. So you're even more invested.
Yeah, so there seems to be a huge online life and a gigantic vicarious life people live through others and media and that sort of thing that I don't really think we've got a grip on it yet. Psychology. I don't think we fully know what's going on in terms of making recommendations. Mm-hmm. Like common sense is okay, you know, if you're gonna play your tablet game for a half hour, you're gonna read for at least a half hour, if not an hour, and you can do exercise for a half hour or more. So, you know, that's our rule, you know, with our kid, balance it out, you know, make it make sense. But people that get left alone, who knows? You know, who knows what's
so
going
how does
on.
That play like with folks that you see in your practice? What's the adverse effect of technology that you see? Maybe how's that? Like, do you tell some people just like, okay, you got to put the technology away?
Got to unplug.
Yeah. I remember a case I had. A guy was obsessed with an online game 20 hours a day and met somebody and was something. I don't know if it was Alaska or wherever. But there
in
was
real life or on the online game?
In the online game, they met the person in the online game. There's an obsession. It goes on. We're talking 18 to 20 hours a day. The guy's trying to get on disability. And, he was absolutely obsessed. But, I mean, like, wait a minute. What does that mean? Why not go apply for a job and then do this on your own time? But I don't
Is
know.
Is that how it turned out?
He moved. To go live with the person, so you know
he met in an online game.
Yeah, that he met in an online game, but it wasn't even really meeting the person. Moving the problem was the duration of hours,
right?
24-hour cycle.
Oh, yeah.
that's borderline brainwashed.
It was
right
18
there.
To 20. Severe OCD, you know, mm-hmm. in that case, which is a little bit rare. But the whole issue of how much of your life do you build around Facebook, Twitter, media following, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people I talk to, that's their main hobby, is Facebooking and Twitter.
Right. Really?
That's what they spend their time doing. Yeah. So, yeah, I bet you if you checked around, you would find a lot of people that is kind of their hobby and what they do versus, say, trail bike riding or going for hikes or being outside or whatever.
Yeah, so what is the damage there? I mean, some people like to hike. Some people like to fish. Some people mm-hmm. like to go online. And mm-hmm. I mean, is there really anything bad about having this online presence? Or is it just the amount of time you spend?
I think it's from the book Am I Normal? The idea in that book was, and it's based on the actual criteria of a psychiatric disorder, if it doesn't interfere with your health, your family, your job, or your social relationships, then it's probably not a disorder.
Mm-hmm. That's like the definition of alcoholism.
Yeah,
if it affects your life, and the people in it, and mm-hmm. makes
if you can't hold a job because of it, it's hurting your liver or your health or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
You know, it's got to have something that's impacting your life in a bad way. So then you can get into, in theory, you could be really screwed up and not have a disorder. You could have bizarre obsessions and whatever else, and as long as you hold it together and don't have problems with your health, your family, your job, or your friends, then that's not really life-damaging consequences.
But then again, the not to cap on the pharmaceutical industry, but it seems like everything now is a disease. Everything now has to be treated with a drug.
Yeah.
And then they advertise on the television and on the radio, all these new drugs.
Yeah.
Like,
and the side effects.
What is up with that? It's going to make you poop your pants involuntarily. It's like, really?
How many?
Who wants to take that?
How many people actually watch those and then, oh my God, I got to go to my doctor and ask him about this drug. I think I need this drug. You never used to see that kind of stuff on television. And now it's like, They're asking people to diagnose themselves mm-hmm. to go in and talk to their doctor about taking this new drug.
Right.
What's up with that?
Oh, God.
Do you ever have people, when they come in, they've been doing that so much that you're like, okay, look, you got to back out of this and this and mm-hmm. this? Or do they have to go back to their MD? How does that go?
Since I was a professor of pharmacology, I don't know of any MD in town I've ever worked with or contacted that doesn't respect what I recommend. Mm-hmm. So they know that's
kind of handy.
Wheelhouse. Yeah, it's cool. So
that's really handy.
I'm not on the hook if something goes wrong.
Yeah, right.
I can say, hey, if it's appropriate, let's try Cymbalta's a really good one, or duloxetine.
Well, do those commercials actually influence people to go in and talk to their doctor about what they think is wrong?
You know, the people I see, I don't hear quite as much of that. The people I see, a lot of them have kind of given up. The big problem with them is treatment noncompliance. Mm-hmm. There could be something that could help them that they're not doing. Huge problem with prescription opioid dependence. That is enormously a big problem. And most people have trouble pulling out of that on their own. I had a person on Friday that did, a pain patient. But a lot of people really, and it's just a vicious cycle. The benefits you get over time wears down, then you got to take something else, and over time it wears down, and then you got side effects building up. So, the opioid thing is a really tough one with a prescription. In other words, you're saying, okay, you got a real problem here, take the pain medication, and you know ahead of time they're going to get dependent, and you know there are going to be side effects, but we don't have anything, you know, to some extent we don't have anything else to do. That's where stuff like spinal cord stimulator comes in, or disc replacement surgeries or stuff like that. But the other question of, like, taking a medication for a psychiatric problem, the whole class of benzodiazepines or sedatives addresses that issue, because it's a kind of immediate feel-good, relaxed pill that you take for stress or anxiety, and if you become dependent on that. By the way, the time frame on usage is 6 weeks on Ativan, Librium, or Valium.
What do you mean, the time frame?
That's how long you're supposed to use it for. They're not.
Oh, you mean the maximum use time?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The time frame on those is 4 to 6 weeks.
And that's to treat what?
That's to treat anxiety.
Okay.
You know,
you only take the thing for 6 weeks to try to.
You're not supposed to,
otherwise
because it's so dependency producing.
Oh, I had no
time.
Idea.
Yeah, and I actually had a lady that was from a previous pain clinic I worked with, dependent on Xanax, went to Denver and went off of it for, I think, 2 days and had a seizure. So the pain doctor was treating chronic pain with Xanax. Real bad idea there, by the way. So
what is Xanax supposed to do?
Xanax, Librium, Valium.
That's all anxiety.
They're all sedatives, big time.
Oh.
Yeah, and you get an effect within 20 to 30 minutes.
So why would she have a stroke by taking by coming off of it?
She was dependent on it, and when you come off some medications,
your body freaks out.
Yeah, I knew a guy who we had no idea, but he was a salesman for a company that used to call on us, and he did a lot of cocaine, and nobody knew. Mm-hmm. And he did it. Well, he finally realized he had a problem, and he went to a clinic or whatever and said, hey, I want to get off of this. They started weaning him off it, and he died.
Wow. Yeah.
From coming off of it. So I guess, yeah.
We were at, when I was psychologist for New Beginnings Drug and Alcohol Dual Diagnosis Center here in Redding for several years, we had a cocktail of Klonopin and several other medications that you take every hour or two. To step you down,
yeah. So you don't go through.
Especially
the
alcohol, you can die in DTs from alcohol easily.
Oh, that's violent. Yeah.
So yeah, we closely watching these people and stepping them down with a minor sedative mixed with some other stuff. And Dr. Boyer, great guy. He was the medical director at that point, and he had a really great skill at tapering people off. But some medications are medications that can be abused, and others aren't. The abused medications, primarily the opioids and the sedatives. That would be in the category of opioids being a big one is Norco, real common, Norco, Percodan, all like oxymorphine. It's a new one, morphine, oxycodone.
Yeah.
So I had a patient come in and go like, I said, what are you taking? I go, well, I'm taking oxymorphone. And I go, whoa, let me guess. I'm not quite familiar with that one because I don't hear it much, but combination of oxycodone and morphine, it's like, yeah, boy, that must really get you.
Holy cow.
Get you pain-free. But so there's that category. And then
I think I saw that person driving on the freeway the other day.
The sedatives are, they're potentially drugs of abuse, so you really got to, keep an eye on it. Then the medication that are really indicated, we want to fix everything we can with behavior and thoughts, okay? If you can do it yourself, we'd way rather do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a long-term solution.
The three big categories that are exceptions to that are ADHD, bipolar, and schizophrenia.
That you can't just fix by
those are
willing yourself
biological.
To be, right.
Yeah, biological. Right. ADHD, tremendously responsive to ADHD meds when appropriate. Bipolar, like I said, omega-3 times 3. And people that are afraid of fish, we do have therapies to help them overcome their fear of fish.
Yeah.
Does that have a name?
No, if you're allergic, I'm sorry.
Finphobia. Yeah.
But,
well, that's a good point. Does flaxseed oil work just as well?
As far as I know, it doesn't.
It's just not.
Yeah, it's kind of that comes up because flaxseed oil is good for you.
Well, it's an alternative omega-3 source for people that are allergic to fish.
I don't know.
No.
I just know the last I heard we were checking into all the different things that work.
No kidding.
There's a pharmacology conference I go to cover OTC products and what works and what doesn't. By the way, SAMe is very effective.
That's over the counter.
Yeah, OTC is over the counter. Acetylsalmethionine is really effective for depression, and it helps your joints. There's no doubt about it. The problem is you have to take about 1,200 milligrams a day. So that is, eight pills a day?
Wow.
You can buy that at Costco fairly cheap, and you take it on an empty stomach, and it actually works. So that helps with depression and your joints. So the St. John's wort works, too. It makes people photosensitive, however. So they're different products.
I mean, I get photosensitive is light, so they have to wear sunglasses all the time?
No, they'd be more sensitive to light and all the problems that come with being in direct sunlight.
Oh.
So that's not really in favor as much. But the bipolar thing is really, it's a tricky one, because if you have a manic episode and you go off the wall and get hospitalized or arrested, you know, that's a big deal.
That can jam.
Lose your job. And,
yeah, I was going to say, that could jam you up with work
and
things.
A lot of people that are bipolar, and the problem is a lot of the medications have major side effects. Lithium, you have to get blood tests on lithium and Depakote. The new one, Latuda, we've seen some what we call extrapyramidal symptoms with that, where people are drooling and their face is dropping. And
whoops.
Some
whoops.
Of it's irreversible.
Drooling's a problem?
That's not good.
Yeah, it can be. Some of the damage can be irreversible.
Uh-oh. We have to take a really quick break.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Bob's over there bulldogging.
Gave me the high sign a little
He's
while ago.
He's pouting because he can't take flaxseed oil.
Nice try,
all right,
Bob's
therapy session will be during the break here for just 2 minutes. Normally we would celebrate capitalism, but now we're going to have treatment for Bob. And then we'll come back with Dr. Sid. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. That ended that. Yeah. Very unceremonious.
Very unceremonious. Well, that's probably a good thing.
Apparently she didn't have time for the pain.
I was getting ready to cry.
Anybody cries, you get extra points, don't you? Dr. Sid made Bill cry.
Sunday afternoon, a beautiful day. Lighten up, guys. Come on.
We're mental. So, okay. When people come in for a talk about the evaluations that you do for the state.
Oh yeah,
because those of us who don't deal with this at all, mm-hmm. and I think people look around and go, "What the heck is everyone in the whole universe on disability?" And can you just get it for anything?
No, absolutely. First of all, I tell you what they call us. We're called consultative examiners, right?
Okay.
So. But
sounds
what
legit.
I feel better about
then,
going in and talking to you.
Then what they call us is on the invoice vendor. Peanuts, popcorn, Cokes, Diet Cokes, vendor.
It is a circus.
Hey, and I call.
They got rid of the circus. Sorry, that's over.
Happy, the director.
Site order a lithium.
Why do you guys call us vendors? What the heck? We're freaking PhDs. Come on, show some love.
I'm not a vendor.
But what the deal
it's
is?
The tell boy
if you have a condition that's going to keep you out of action for at least 1 year, you should apply for disability. And there's a medical grounds like a badly shattered leg or something. And the doctor goes, look, you're going to need a lot of rehab. It's going to take a while to get over this. And then there's a psych grounds, which could be a motorcycle accident, a stroke, something like that. Or here's a really big one. If you have people that are really trying and doing everything they're supposed to do, a classic example is bipolars I've seen. They're doing everything they can do. They're taking their medication. They're seeing their psychiatrist. They try to return to work. A year and a half, 2-3 years later, they break down again. Even though they're doing everything right, then they would reapply to get back on. But the idea is, do you have a condition that prevents you from doing an SRT? You guys know what SRT
no.
is?
No.
A
psychiatric?
No. Simple?
Repetitive
task?
Task like your jobs.
Like,
sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh God.
Yes.
Like you
what
go
did
to.
You do a radio like you, talk
I am normal.
No, it's.
He hasn't even read the book. Look at that.
It's kind of
simple repetitive task. Okay, so
yeah, so could
like,
you work at a call center redirecting calls? Could you do that? Could you on the medical side? Could you push a mop in the mall by yourself at night? Because some people, believe it or not, hating people is not a disabling condition, or not liking people. I hear that a lot.
Really?
It's because you hate people or don't like people, that doesn't mean
like
you're disabled.
Like they don't want to work around people?
Exactly. Or? And that's okay. You can have jobs when you're not working around people.
That's true.
Absolutely. And I try
now,
to explain that
now,
to
does
people.
PTSD fit into this whole thing?
It can. It's one of the disorders
right.
that, in my opinion, is really, really treatable. But, yeah, you know, that can fall in if you're frequently having nightmares or flashbacks regarding a trauma while you're working in a call center.
Or what about the people who kind of wig out if they get around very many people, that kind of thing?
Social phobia or agoraphobia. Yeah, that can occur too.
But they could find it. Theoretically, they could do a job.
And that's where it gets really tricky because one of my jobs is to say, can we find a place for this person in the world? You know, is there.
Right.
Right.
You know, like, hey, I just heard, you know, they're hiring custodial workers at a local school, after school janitorial work, cleaning up stuff, which doesn't really pay that bad. So, you know, you're not around people. You get to do what you're doing. You're not medically hurt.
Yeah.
And so it's a real.
So do you have to figure out what they could do? As long
yeah, I have to figure out.
In addition to figuring out if they can.
It's pretty simple. I have to figure out based on intelligence and memory functioning and psychiatric disorders if they can perform an SRT 8 hours a day. Simple repetitive task.
Whether or not that task is even available, that has nothing to do with it. It's just a matter
And that's what really drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
you
I was
going to
say, that's kind of tricky. You're like an employment agency and
Yeah, but I don't, that's like not part of my job, but I try to make that happen.
Right.
I recommend a lot of people to voc rehab, you know, like say try this or whatever. The threshold for qualifying, usually about 1 out of 3 people eventually end up making it. But the idea is it isn't just, here's a beautiful example is an attorney who has a whatever traumatic brain injury, their IQ gets knocked down from 50 to 40. No, I'm kidding. Let's say I'm sure they're good attorneys. I just haven't met any. But anyway, you know, there are good ones. But let's say somebody's got an IQ of 120. They get smacked somehow.
Yeah.
They have an incident occur. They're back down to average 100. Okay. Because, or let's go down lower. Let's say maybe 80, which is below average but not significantly impaired. So they could easily do an SRT. Maybe they can't do their complex and detailed tasks that they were doing.
Right.
But they absolutely. So that's when we get into a really bind where you got a really educated, smart person who's now functioning a little bit below average but not impaired. And you could say, whoa, you need to rethink things here and go into, you know, go do something else. So that's kind of hard to hear. You know,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The person.
Well, because I ran into a girl. I think I told you this on the phone. I had run into a girl who was 17, 18. She had just graduated from high school, and she was on Social Security disability because she had ADD or
ADHD.
I'm sorry, I don't know the difference between the two. What is the difference between the two?
One,
you're kind of hyper. And
yeah, ADHD has subcategories primarily of inattentive, hyperactive, and combined types.
Okay.
So
if you're ADD, you're just sort of hyper?
ADD is more probably, it's the inattentive type.
Okay.
You may not be hyper with that.
Oh, okay.
But the point is that's so correctable, you know.
So why would a kid who's 18 wind up on basically long-term disability because of that? Just
it would have to prove to be treatment resistant.
Okay.
They'd have to try methylphenidate, which is Ritalin, Adderall, Concerta.
So do you wind up doing that? Okay, so someone comes in and you, you know, you find out what they're doing, which may be like nothing.
Right.
And you say, okay, here, we got to go try this.
Right.
Or do you have to evaluate them right then, right there?
Oh, the most problematical evaluations are the parents who bring kids in deliberately off of their ADHD med to show me how bad they really are.
Well, oh, that's helpful.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What on earth? You got something that's helping a child function normally,
yeah,
you know, at a regular school day, which is what we're assessing, to qualify for it. So
this kid said like her mom's on disability and mm-hmm. it was a generational deal.
That happens. Yep, that happens sometimes. And when you ask somebody who's, I had a guy the other day, I think 23, not really anything wrong, a little below average intelligence, no memory problems, learn things fast. So when do you plan on getting to work? I don't. Well, do you ever plan on working? Not really. Well, what are you going to do? I just want to stay on disability.
Yeah, no ambition, no.
No. And I think the person in that case was kind of raised that way. And then you have the other case where the guy's worked all his life or the lady's worked all her life, and they come in, they can barely walk, they've had a stroke.
Sure.
Or a motorcycle accident or an auto accident.
And I think everybody would totally understand
that.
Yeah,
you totally understand.
The first one, though, mm-hmm. people don't. I mean, people are frustrated with.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just society at large, I should say, is mm-hmm. just frustrated with.
But what about the folks that, you know, work their whole life and then they're just tired. They just don't want to work anymore, you know. They just want to stay home.
Yeah, that can, not I happening. Mean, that's it, your dog's
I can,
job.
I can clean.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what dogs do.
Well, there's a
yeah, Bill's off work there for a little while last year though.
Yeah.
And you know, first, I think it was like the first.
You drove the dog crazy.
Oh, my gosh. It was the first couple of days I came home. Were there 7 loaves of bread on the counter? He found the bread machine.
Oh, whoa.
Out of that was packed in the garage.
Stay
he unpacked.
Busy.
I'm like, what are we opening? A homeless shelter? What's going on here? Yeah, Bill had to go back to work. He was baking us out of house and home. He was going to turn everybody into a giant muffin.
But people
bad.
Can get people, if they feel like they are injured or damaged to the point that they can't work for a year, be it psychiatrically, intellectually, memory-wise, or physically, they should apply. You know, they should apply for disability.
And that's done through Social Security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the medical doctors do the internal medicine evals. Then I do a lot. If I don't do all. There are a couple other guys doing them, too, but I've done over 25,000. So good chance you'd see me if you apply for that. And my take, honestly, is I really think of myself as a compassionate person. I'm pretending this person is somebody I know and care about or a family member or something like that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I go in with it like, I'm going to do all I can to help your case. And if you prove me wrong by faking or lying, which happens.
I'm sure.
You know, or coming in with a blatantly kind of, I don't like people. I don't want to work because I don't like people. What? Okay. Sometimes I don't like people either. And I can name a few people I really don't like, but that doesn't keep me from working.
You know? It doesn't get you on disability.
But there are people, I mean, it's really kind of interesting.
Thus far, it's not disabling.
I used to think of this as kind of like really, really mundane stuff. You know, it's like, wow, you do these when you're not seeing other people. And then I realized, wait a minute, there are people that absolutely
I was going to say it's really, it's really important. Yeah.
There are other people that absolutely shouldn't. Then there's about a third of the people in the middle that could probably go either way. And a lot of what I do is try to provide hope for people. Like part of the thing that I do when we're done is just say, you know, ladies crying, our kid's got ADHD, he's almost running out in Cypress Avenue. We have to hold him, drag him into the car, literally horribly bad. It's like, please ask your pediatrician about a trial of one of the ADHD meds like Adderall. And then I got a call back saying, oh, my God, thank you. You know,
it worked.
It's a huge difference. Yeah.
Jeez, that's awesome.
Yeah, so when you can do stuff, and that's not what I get paid for. That's not my job. It's just you want to make the world, you know.
It's a side benefit.
Out. Yeah. That's what's
for you and them.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back with Dr. Sid. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. never too late.
The go-to.
The crazy train. So, you know, some people in your line of work probably get pushed about that, huh? They don't like to talk about the word, the C word.
My dad.
Not that C word.
Did you hear this about what my dad said when I got my PhD?
You did tell me, but I think, I totally forgot.
Same with my dad, right?
It's like, you're going to deal with crazy people
all the
time?
He's a great guy. He goes, I'm about to get my PhD from New York in record time. And he's a sales manager, district regional manager for a coffee company. And he's down-to-earth practical guy. And he goes, son, I just want you to know we're really proud of you. I think it's great that you want to make your living working with crazy people. And he said it with a straight face. He said, I know crazy people need people to work with, son. I'm very proud of you. I'm going, Dad, no, it's not like that.
We don't call them that. We don't use the cray-cray word.
We don't. There's a joke in psychology that
I'm not
spreading this, but the joke is the psychologists work with the people with problems. The psychiatrists work with. That was our joke in psychology, and I didn't make it up.
Yeah.
I've said it.
Well,
but,
oftentimes they are in that field because they need
a lot,
the help.
A lot of what we do is really a lot more life management stuff. We call it CBT, cognitive behavior therapy. What you're thinking and what you're doing, what you're not thinking and not doing, determines a huge extent of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure, because you know you talk to people all the time. I've got several conversations. Okay, mm-hmm. Metaphorically running through the back of my mind. And I'm thinking, you know, here are people who have, they start telling you all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole time I'm listening, I'm thinking, okay, mm-hmm. Stop doing that. Get over here and do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I'm looking at how to fix it. And mm-hmm. For some reason, there are a lot of people who don't seem to be able to order those things for themselves.
Yeah.
And they share a lot.
Yep.
They love to share, which makes people like me
mm-hmm.
lose it. I finally have learned, like, just listen, right? Don't. They're not really telling. See, I used to think, I used to actually believe that they were telling me this because they wanted to fix it.
Right.
And so I'm like, all right, focus with me here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to get the ball down the field. We're going to kick it through the uprights.
Right.
We've got a plan. And they didn't want a plan.
No.
They just wanted it to be broken and wanted somehow you to go on the ride.
Yeah.
Is that what you do during the day?
No.
The ride?
It's really, it's real, for me, it's like really very, very clear-cut stuff. It's called operational behaviors. Do you have a job? Are you doing something you're okay at and okay doing, and are you comfortable with it? Number two, do you have how's our things with your family? Number three, how are your friends' relationships with your friends and social life, hobbies and recreations, what you got going on that? So if you look at during your waking consciousness, what are you doing and what's happening? There's huge room for variation. That's way normal. You know,
it is
normal.
That's true.
It is.
Yeah, you can. You know, I mean.
So what about? I know. I mean, we've always been big fans of, you know, who you hang around with is who
that's
you become,
important.
And that. Do you run into that a lot, where people come in with all these problems, and a lot of it is just related around the crowd?
I've had friends. That point, I wrote a chapter in Life God called Situational Engineering, and that's hugely important, and it really came up in the drug and alcohol population.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it was.
I just moved here from Denver to get away from the people doing meth, or I just got out of here to get away from heroin, or I divorced my husband because he's a dealer, and
We're
way into that. So, yeah, there's a tremendous situational component to it, and that's probably one of the biggest drivers. I mean, you do have closet alcoholics and meth heads and heroin users that do it on their own, and not that many people might know, but a really powerful predictor is you tend to do the behaviors, your peer group, that you have your audience in your mind of who's important to you,
mm-hmm.
and you tend to some extent shape your behavior to that group.
Oh, I see it with. I mean, I have a couple of people I work with that they come in with these bizarre stories of woe,
mm-hmm.
and the whole time I'm hearing this, and a lot of times they're not telling me; I'm just overhearing the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, do you not see that these people are probably not people you need to hang around with, and all mm-hmm. this crap would go out of your life?
Right.
But they don't seem to be able to put that together.
You know what's fascinating is it's a similar problem to an abused wife or girlfriend mm-hmm. staying with the same guy. There's a familiarity of the miserable. You know what you can predict what's going to happen. It's miserable, but at least you know what's going to happen.
You're miserable?
Yeah, you're miserable, but you can predict it.
Right. And it's my miserable, so I'm going to keep it.
Some people have a terror of abandonment or being alone. People that are dependent, it's like, I got somebody who's a jerk, but at least I have somebody.
Right.
So you tend, people fall into that trap too, and it's a tough one to get out of. Yeah.
Tell me this. So from a, outside looking in, right? You have somebody telling you all this stuff, and obviously, if they would benefit from a mental health professional, I mean, it's obviously fairly easy to suggest that. But is it better to just listen and say nothing?
You can. If you listen and say nothing, the person is going to clear their mind and get out what they want to get out. Or they could be misleading you, but there's a whole type of therapy based on listening and reflecting back what they're saying called Rogerian therapy or client-centered. Carl Rogers created that in the 50s, and it does have benefits because you're validating what people say and you're getting their feelings out, and the idea is eventually they'll get to a point
they'll process it and be done with it.
I realize what I said earlier was BS. Here's why I said. So if you just reflect back, you can get there. You can get benefits sometimes, but the whole CDP movement, cognitive behavior therapy, is based around what are you thinking or not thinking and what are you doing or not doing. So, if you're not thinking thoughts that are damaging to you, like you're worthless, no good, you'll never have a job. If you're thinking productive thoughts like, a guy I just got right now, instead of obsessing about losing the job he had, which was very unfair case, it's like, I wonder if I'm going to work in Bermuda, Hawaii, Alaska, or Canada, or here. So, what you're thinking and then what you're doing. Are you putting applications out or are you just sitting there, looking at TV type thing?
The power of positive thinking. I mean, how many millions of those books are sold?
And then if you throw into that the power of positive acting, mm-hmm. I mean, if you put stuff together like that, if you think about it, if you're a product of what you think and don't think and what you do and don't do, you can really have it made really easy. If you're thinking at worst neutral thoughts, and at worst, doing behaviors that aren't damaging, you're at least okay. And then when you get them going in the positive direction, mm-hmm. it can turn it around. And that's not a medication.
No.
That's what's going on in your head.
No, that's stuff you control.
Yeah, 2x2 matrix, yeah.
So, okay, when we come back, I do want to ask you, though, about these people that go bananas, like the guy in Las Vegas, that now they've decided has some mental illness because they can't figure anything else out. Mm. So what about all that? Do we have more of those people? Do they just act out more? Do they feel and how do we spot them? Because frankly, just from my not psychiatrist point of view, I don't think we do. I think sometimes people blow a fuse.
Yeah, we're not yet. I think we could have to start really early.
All right, we're going to find out what we're looking for. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Bob's got a... What is it, Bob? What does that grin mean?
This is a subject he knows nothing about. By his own admission.
No, it was the other subject. It was the one that Bill picked.
I start to shiver, and Jimmy always viewed it with concern. But but I'd rather have cirrhosis of the liver than an intellect that's second to a fern. I wonder if old Jimmy's gonna hear it when I tell him that his logic wasn't sound. They'll dose him up on lots of evil spirits when they take him to the psychiatric grounds. Yes, me, I've got a bottle in front of me, and Jimmy has a frontal lobotomy. Just different ways to kill the pain the same. But I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than have to have a frontal lobotomy. I might be drunk, but at least I'm not insane.
Is that the ultimate country song or what?
That is the ultimate song. I don't care what genre. Who was that?
Believe it or not, is a licensed MD.
Of course it was.
Randy Hanslick.
You have to send me that. I'll post it on the page.
Practices in Georgia these days.
Because the video was actually worth its weight in gold. We could see
yes,
that over.
It was.
Yeah.
That's called I'd Rather Have a Bottle in Front of Me Than a Frontal Lobotomy.
I didn't know they actually wrote a song about it. I thought that was something that the Irish just joked about. Who knew? All right. So now that we've determined drinking is good, drugs are fine in moderation. As long as they're being supervised appropriately. And you're not hurting anyone or yourself. Honestly, are people getting nuttier? Does it feel nuttier to you,
is it
just us? Because it feels nuttier to us.
I've done over 20. I think I can say I've done more full scale IQ tests than anybody I've ever heard of.
Is it going down?
I've done over 25,000, and absolutely yes.
It is, isn't it?
I knew we were in trouble.
It's like Idiocracy.
Remember the pipeline oil deal in the Gulf ruptured?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it spilled oil for what, 2 or 3 months?
Yeah. Right.
It's like, I could have thought of something. Why didn't somebody think of something?
Obama goes,
it's above my pay grade. I don't know what to do. It's like, well, somebody think of something, for God's sakes. When you made it, did you ever have a plan of what are you going to do if it gets out of control and breaks? And I started thinking, people are not getting smarter. And then one cool
That's a good
part,
example, actually.
Remember the people in the Chilean mine that got trapped?
Yep. Yeah.
And they created that thing to get them out?
Right.
That was giving me some hope there. But other than that, holy cow, I don't know if people are dependent on other people being smart or what, but I'm sure there are smart people in the world.
If you don't use it, you lose it. That's what they
say. Yeah, and they're very smart people in the world, but they really have to step up. They really do.
And this total dependence on the nightly news for your
fix,
that's got to stop, because these people – read what's on the page. They're about as dumb as anybody. And I really feel like we're living in the Idiocracy stages right now.
That movie was about the guy who went into hibernation or whatever for 500 years.
Because he was stupid.
He was an average guy.
Yeah.
A perfectly average IQ. He wakes up 500 years later.
And he's
the smartest man on the planet by far.
Yeah.
My favorite scene is like every meeting I attend where they talk about the Brondo. What does, Brondo's got
Brondo
what,
has what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave, right? It's got electrolytes. And then he says, well, what are electrolytes? It's what plants crave. Well, how do you know that? Because it's in Brondo. And it just goes around and around. I'm like, oh, my God, I go to that meeting all the time.
Oh,
is that bad? But no, it does feel like people are spinning out of control.
People have to, you got to step up and solve problems that are going on. And
what's some simple stuff people can do?
Probably not have as many kids unless you're in a spot to
do so. Stop breeding.
Exactly. Unless you're in a spot to do so and can raise your kids and not damage them. Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's true, because, you do see.
We reach
that was the whole premise behind Idiocracy.
I know. It was the overbreeding. It's true. We
reached a point. There's a population.
It was prophecy. It wasn't actually a funny movie. It was prophecy.
But there was a population control thing that I read up on. And I think it was, what are we in November? It was last spring that we reached a point of negative tolerance for Earth resources and people. In other words, at the rate when we got to that point, staying there, we would deplete everything and not survive. And the population is still going up. The China experiment, where they're going to let everybody have one kid, that didn't work.
No, didn't work.
And it's not going to work because people have a innate proclivity to want to reproduce, and you know, something.
I think they just like
done.
To practice. I
yeah,
think really,
practice
they like to
is
practice
fine,
more than anything. But,
but
you know, but, well, tell me this though: stepping away from some of the electronic imaginary. What about this online dating? God, we only have what, a minute left? Oh, we have less than a minute. We have 30 seconds.
Something profound. Think of something quick.
Dang
somebody.
It. Okay, so the online dating and stuff like that. I mean, all that is before, kind of like before my time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a weird place we've gotten to.
It's
we don't
a
do a
giant,
lot of interpersonal stuff
it's,
anymore.
It's a fishing line in the ocean behind a trawler versus a giant one-mile net.
Right.
That's how many people you can reach compared to finding somebody walking through your
okay,
daily
I get the net.
So it's a pretty pretty broad thing, and a lot of people have a lot in common, and I think people, there are many, many, many people that can find many, many, many other people that could get along just great.
Mentally healthier to hang out with real people or electronic people?
No, real people. No, they're people.
Real
people are really
win.
Similar in a lot of ways. They really are.
Nice.
Everybody's
oh,
got
well, we'll
their...
have to do this again because
yeah,
this was super fun.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to have you back.
Cool. Well, I enjoyed the heck
we'll out have
of
an outline next time. We'll,
no, we won't. That'll ruin
that'll
everything.
Ruin
that'll ruin
it.
Everything.
Yeah. No, we got a lot to talk about.
Brush up on your what happens when you talk in your sleep. We want to know what that's about.
I have no idea. It's not my forte.
All right, you've been listening to We the People. We've been goofing off today, but it's been fun, and we hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with something serious, and preferably not dire.
Right here on KCNR Shasta Red.